I'm David Haynes, the opinions editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Welcome to JSN Politics. I'm joined in studio today by reporter Mary Spacuzza and by Dan Bice, a columnist for the paper. I'll also be joined in Washington by our Washington Bureau Chief, Craig Gilbert, and in Madison by Patrick Marley. So here's what's on our minds this week. Can Trump be huge with Democrats? How big donors might shape the U.S. Senate race, the battle that's already underway for the state Supreme Court seat, races for Milwaukee mayor and county executive, and your questions. But first, let's go to a chat that I had earlier with Craig Gilbert of the Washington Bureau. We're joined now by Craig Gilbert of our Washington Bureau. And Craig, I believe you're working on a piece that is looking at Donald Trump's support potentially with the other side. Talk about what you're finding.
Well, you know, the closer Donald Trump, every step he takes toward the Republican nomination, this discussion and debate about his electability will grow. There's a lot of skepticism about his ability to win a general election. His counter to that is that he'll build on his white working class base in the Republican Party and be able to draw blue collar Democrats in a way that makes him more electable than other potential Republicans. It's interesting, if you look at that in the polling now, there's not a lot of evidence that that's happening. You have to take these early general election polls with a huge grain of salt. But right now, Donald Trump is not pulling Democrats, crossover Democrats in to any greater degree than Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio. And in fact, he's actually losing more Republicans than those other candidates.
So, Craig, yeah, I was going to ask you about the polls, but it's still pretty early, right?
It's really early, and we've already seen, you know, one example of how the early polls can be wrong. For a long time, the polling was showing on the Republican side that Trump has these huge negatives and there's a huge percentage of Republican voters that would not support him under any circumstances, that he had this sort of low ceiling that was going to hold him back as the field winnowed. But the field has shrunk, and Donald Trump is still building his support among Republican voters. So he kind of proved the doubters wrong so far on that front. It's a bigger, you know, it's a tougher question for him in the general election on electability, because this is a very polarized country. And so he's arguing that he can break through that polarization and draw support from crossover Democrats, especially blue-collar Democrats, and particularly in states like Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio, states in the Midwest that have been battleground states that have been hard in some cases for Republicans to win. Again, we're not seeing that in the polling yet, this is a really important trend and pattern to watch going forward if, in fact, Donald Trump keeps marching toward the Republican nomination. There's going to be a lot of concern within the Republican Party about his electability, so this is a key thing to watch.
So there is an example, though, in history, right? Everyone wants to compare themselves to Ronald Reagan. Well, Ronald Reagan actually did that.
Ronald Reagan did do that. Again, it's a different world now because people are much more hardened in their voting along party lines, and so it's tougher to do that. And just because you can win blue-collar white voters and are strong with them in the Republican Party, it doesn't mean you're necessarily going to draw blue-collar white Democrats. And that's really the test that would face Donald Trump, because he could actually lose some support among college-educated Republicans. I mean, there are people you meet out on the campaign trail who just don't like his style and are kind of appalled and horrified by him. And so, you know, whatever Republican support he loses, he's got to more than make up for on the Democratic side.
But there is within the Democratic Party a strain, as there is in the Republican Party, of working class angst, right? So that could argue that there's at least a chance there for somebody like Trump to pull in those voters.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely has existed, and that's clearly something that Bernie Sanders has been tapping into. But whether the same voters that are driven toward Bernie Sanders because of their worries about the economy and their own economic situation, whether they would be similarly drawn to Donald Trump is a big, big question.
Well, and there's also, isn't there the question of Donald Trump needing to pivot? I mean, I would think that's a pretty big pivot for Donald Trump at this point.
It is, and this is another thing to watch, because Donald Trump has been a very flexible guy. You know, we've talked about how his appeal in some ways is not very ideological, and he's even signaled, he's not very subtle about this. I mean, he's said that his style and his demeanor would be different as president and possibly as a general election nominee, and whether he could pivot on substance, on some of these issues, he's already pivoted. I mean, he's already taking positions that are kind of anathema to some very hardline conservative activists. And so, you know, you could argue that gives him a little bit more potential than the average Republican nominee, because he's talking about not cutting entitlements, because he's talking about, you know, negotiating drug prices with the government, negotiating drug prices, because he's taking positions that are not kind of, that are kind of heresy among the Republicans. Saying nice things about Planned Parenthood. These are all things that could actually, you know, give him some appeal to conservative and moderate Democrats.
Yeah. And we as voters have short attention spans, as we well know. So with that in mind, Craig, thanks so much for your time.
Great talking with you.
All right. So Mary and Dan, let's move now to the U.S. Senate race. And Dan, let me first turn to you first. It got a little bit more interesting with the death of Justice Scalia, the Senate race here in Wisconsin. What's going on there? How does that affect this race?
Well, there are two polls that are worth taking note of. One is a Pew Research poll that shows that throughout the country, Republicans are very much committed to making sure the position is not filled, and Democrats are very much committed to making sure the position is filled. And I wouldn't think that that would be any different here. So that leaves the independents, and where do they go? And there was a poll by the PPP, which is a left-leading group. They found that independents in Wisconsin want the position filled. About 62% favor that. But if there is a nominee, the number goes up to 70-some percent. So, you know, for Ron Johnson, he's taken this very strong position that he's opposed to any vote this year. And he's got this problem where he's known among Republicans somewhat, but among independents, he doesn't have much name recognition. So it's interesting to see if he sticks to this position. But he's very strongly opposed to a vote on a nominee this year.
And so in a close race, independents really matter, right, Mary?
Right. And if you're in a situation like Ron Johnson, where tons of Wisconsin voters say they don't know enough about you to form an opinion, something like that, where you're going against what they want to see, can really influence, especially independents.
And that's been his problem. I mean, he's, even during his 5 years in office, he's spoken mainly to talk radio, and of late, he's been a regular on Vicki McKenna's show. You don't see him talking very much to mainstream outlets. His name recognition is just not great among independents.
How big of a slice of the electorate are independents in Wisconsin at this point? Do we have a good number on that?
What the Marquette poll says, he overlaps independents and the undecided, and says, you know, it's 10% or maybe a little bit less than that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're a very polarized state, more polarized than most states.
Mm-hmm. And they're also the leaners who say they're independent but always vote with one party
one
or the
way
other.
Or another. So there's a lot of outside money already pouring into this race. I saw a story that we had that the Judicial Crisis Network, a conservative legal group, is pouring some money in on Johnson's side. People for the American Way, a liberal group, is robocalling. What's this race going to look like in terms of outside support for these two candidates?
You know, Johnson's considered the second most vulnerable candidate in the Senate right now. So there is a lot of money. And I think he has to narrow the gap to make sure money keeps on pouring in. Bill Glauber and I wrote a piece this week on some of the big names who are giving, including Sheldon Adelson, who's given to him, and Dan Quayle, who's given money to him. On the other side, Mark Lazary, one of the owners of the Bucks, is given. The biggest donor is Richard Eline, who's an interesting figure, who's become very, very involved in Wisconsin politics. He owns Uline Packaging, and he's now put about $2 million into the race, primarily through a group called Restoration PAC, a very, very conservative group from Illinois that's already been spending money attacking Feingold on foreign policy issues. And it'll be interesting to see just how much money Uline will put into this race.
And again, this race is competitive, which matters because there's a chance the Democrats could flip the Senate, right?
There is. And, you know, this is the third quarter in a row in which Feingold has outraised Johnson, this time by about $1 million. They have about the same amount of money on hand. But, again, Feingold seems to be raising much more money. He's raised money online and a number of other places. And I'm interested in finding out when the pressure starts mounting from Republicans for Johnson to put some of his own money into the race. Last time he put about $9 million into the race. This year he's saying he'll put nothing into the race. But if he continues to be outraised by Feingold, people are going to say you need to make up that money somehow.
There's a new poll coming out today, too, and it'll be interesting to see whether his numbers have budged because it really has not been looking favorable for Johnson. He's been trailing Feingold.
That's the Marquette poll. It's due out at 12:15, just in a few minutes.
And that's where we're seeing that just a huge chunk of Wisconsin voters don't know enough about
and
him.
He doesn't seem to be doing much to bridge that gap to get his message out to independents. I haven't seen anything like that. So as these numbers come out, we'll see if he does anything to pivot more toward the center.
Are there any signs? I think the only thing that could force Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, to take a vote on a nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court would be the risk of losing the Senate. Are there any signs so far in what Johnson has said, back to the Scalia issue, that he might be somewhat flexible?
Well, I think it also depends on who the president nominates, and if it's someone who's moderate or if it's someone who even leans a little bit to the right. I wouldn't expect that, but if he does something like that, what do you do if you're Mitch McConnell or Ron Johnson? Do you say, I'm not going to vote on this because, you know, and the problem with this so far is the whole thing looks incredibly partisan to anyone outside the process. Republicans say one thing, they don't want the candidate, Democrats say another, and if Obama would do something like that, I think it obviously makes it much more difficult for Johnson to continue to say that he's completely opposed to a vote.
All right. Well, let's leave it there on that one. Now let's turn to another really hot race and an interview that I recorded earlier with Patrick Morley of our Madison Bureau. By Patrick Morley of the Journal Sentinel's Madison Bureau. Patrick, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, David.
You bet. So you wrote last week in a piece in the Journal Sentinel that the state Supreme Court race between Joanne Kloppenburg, an appeals court judge, and Justice Rebecca Bradley was likely to be a battle royale. Why do you think that?
Well, I think that Joanne Kloppenburg performed much better than anyone had expected. She came in with 43%. Bradley had 45%. So Bradley's in the better position, but she was unable to get, you know, above the 50% mark, which incumbents like to get for a primary to sort of show that they already have majority support. So I think both conservatives and liberals were surprised at how well Kloppenburg performed. That's going to help her with fundraising. It's going to dramatically increase the chance that an outside group from the left comes in and spends money on that race. The opponents of Bradley feel very strongly that they have a good message by linking her to Governor Scott Walker, who's appointed her to the bench 3 times in 3 years. And so I think we're going to be relentlessly hearing about that between now and April 5th.
And so what do you think will happen with the voters for Joe Donald, the other person in the primary? He's
right.
Endorsed so, Kloppenburg at this point.
Yeah, Joe Donald got 12% of the vote, and he has endorsed Kloppenburg now, even though Kloppenburg had been critical of him during the primary. I think the general sense is that most of those votes will go to Kloppenburg, but you know the feeling among both sides is that where the Donald votes go is less important than where all the voters go who didn't vote in the primary. You know, the primary had about a 13% turnout statewide. We're going to see a much higher turnout in the April election because of the presidential primaries. And so I think the real question is, where are these people who haven't expressed an opinion so far, where do they fall? And that really ties in with what does turnout look like for the presidential race. Right now we have pretty heated contests on both sides, I'd say looking maybe a little more competitive on the Republican side just because you have so many candidates, though that's thinning every day. And with the Democrats, it seems that Hillary Clinton's putting herself in a better spot compared to Bernie Sanders. All that to be said, a lot of primaries around the country before April 5 when Wisconsin has its, with the presidential primaries really going to drive turnout. And so where do those voters fall when it comes to the Supreme Court race.
Yeah, yeah. So a question about both candidates. John Clappenberg, of course, ran against Justice David Prosser in 2011 in the thick of the Act 10 debate. And her race that time was as much against, I would argue, Governor Scott Walker as it was David Prosser. But does she have an advantage having run a statewide campaign? Statewide campaigns are hard to do.
Yes. So, I mean, that 2011 race, really, the Prosser and Clappenberg almost became bystanders in this contest because it sort of was this referendum on Walker and this referendum on Act 10, the limits on collective bargaining. Prosser won narrowly. So the supporters of Bradley point that out and say, look, the Democrats and the left was running at sort of top gear, and even then they weren't able to unseat someone. The other side of that is that Clappenberg has name recognition from her statewide run. Walker's team was really tuned up for that election as well and had done an excellent job with turnout to help Prosser. Walker's pretty unpopular right now. We'll know more from the latest Marquette poll, but since the fall, he's been in the high 30s, 37, 38% for approval rating. So he's in a different place than he was in 2011.
Right, and that Marquette poll's due out today, by the way, at 12:15. Now, a question about Bradley. She was appointed by Governor Scott Walker toward the end of last year to fill the vacancy created by the death of a justice on the court. Does that help her, or given Walker's popularity problems at the moment, could that hurt her?
Well, it does a little bit of both. I mean, the fact is that she's an incumbent of the court. She's been on since October. She can run as Justice Bradley. That's better than being able to run as Judge Bradley, which is what she would have done if she hadn't been appointed. I think the people, conservatives, allow that it does hurt a little bit to have a close ties to Walker right now. But she already had those links. Walker appointed her to the bench in Milwaukee County in 2012 and then in early 2015 to the appeals court. So she was going to be hit by her opponents as being close to Walker anyway. Those would say it's better for her to be on the court and get that sort of added benefit of being an incumbent.
All right. Well, Patrick, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, welcome back. So, Dan and Mary, let's talk about two local races that at least one of them could be very hot. Let's start with the mayor's race, though. Mayor Tom Barrett, incumbent, running against Alderman Bob Donovan. Mm-hmm. In the primary, the mayor didn't clear 50%, which I was a little surprised by. Any concern at City Hall?
I think there is concern from the Barrett camp. You know, obviously there's been a spike in homicides, which has been a problem that he's been, you know, heavily criticized over the
rash
of...
Big issue for Donovan.
Big issue for Donovan, law and order candidate who's talked about wanting to hire, you know, hundreds more police officers. He hasn't really said how he would pay for that, but obviously he can position himself as someone who wants to get tough on crime. He has been at City Hall for a while, too, so he will face questions about his own record. But, yeah, I do think that there's concern in the Barrett camp that with the spike in homicides, there have been a lot of car thefts, that, you know, he might be more vulnerable than he has been in past years. That said, he has, like, $800,000 in his campaign war chest and still is pretty, I guess people see he's likable and nice.
And he's not spent much of anything from that. And
right.
Clearly, they thought they were going to win, so he felt no need to spend anything during the primary. But I think that's going to change dramatically. And you already see them this week rolling out endorsements and today starting to attack Donovan for the first time, calling him a Republican.
Yeah. Donovan doesn't have nearly as much money, and I would argue he is a bit of a flawed candidate, as the column that you wrote this week pointed out. Walk us through some of the findings in that column.
I focus on three things, none of them new, but something that appears regularly on various forums, on Facebook, Twitter, and even on the Journal Sentinel comment sections. First one is a 1992 disorderly conduct citation he got for looking through a peephole at a at UWM bathroom stall, and his 2005 charge by the feds that was resolved with a $2,500 fine and an agreement that he wouldn't be involved in any nonprofits for 2 years. And then his hiring of a social media coordinator, a guy named Steven Schumacher, who has three theft-related charges from 2012 and currently owes the state about $28,000 in income taxes. So instead of just having those things linger out there, I decided to sit down and talk to Donovan about each of these things, and he was pretty cooperative.
I thought he was surprisingly open, actually.
He was very open about it at the time. Afterwards, he ended up writing a Facebook post to you, or Steve wrote a lengthy post attacking me and the column even before it was written. But yeah, he was very open. He says, you know, in 1992, he did look through the peephole. That something weird was going on in the next stall, and so he decided to do that, and he wanted to emphasize that he was doing nothing lewd during this. On the other one, he on the 2005 incident where he was charged with not disclosing his ties to a nonprofit that he started called the Milwaukee Alliance, and that his wife was actually running at the time, he voted on block grants that gave money to that group. And in addition to that, he also gave campaign money to the Alliance when it had a cash shortfall. Mm-hmm. His main point is that he doesn't think he did anything wrong, and that his agreement not to pay this $25,000 fine, first he doesn't call it a fine, even though the agreement refers to it as a penalty. He seems to think that this is just something he did on his own without any push by the prosecutors. And then regarding Steve Schumacher, his decision to hire him, he says Schumacher feels sorry for what he did, where he impersonated a delivery guy for the Journal Sentinel and solicited tips. You know, he says he's sorry for that, but he comes highly recommended, is very good at running Twitter and Facebook. And I don't know if you remember, a couple years ago, Bob Donovan had somebody create a fake Bob Donovan account on Twitter, and he said he didn't even know what Twitter was at the time, but now he's paying somebody $3,000 a month to run his Twitter account for him.
The interesting thing about the bathroom incident, too, is that he basically said that he hadn't seen the UWM police officer's account and that it was a misrepresentation. And he's been endorsed by the Milwaukee Police Officers Union, so it's interesting that he's saying that the police officer essentially lied or misrepresented.
I asked him if he thought that if the officer manufactured this account or came up with it on his own. He said he didn't want to comment on that. But clearly he says he did not say any of that stuff. And he's implied on Facebook since then that maybe someone manufactured, created this document. But it's been around since 2000, and Journal Sentinel did a story on it in 2000. But his version of what happened, to me, was much the most detailed account of what he says happened in that incident.
So quickly on Mayor Barrett, what do you expect his messaging to look like? He's got a lot of money in the bank. He can run some ads. Is this going to be Mayor Barrett, nice guy mayor who did a great job for you, or is it going to be attacking Donovan? Some of both.
I think that a lot of what we're going to hear from Mayor Barrett is that he's optimistic about the future of the city, citing the progress that they've made in downtown development, that he's committed to fighting to make the city better.
He's got to deal with the crime issue, though, and he's going to have to say, I'm aware of it, we're concerned about it.
We're making progress.
There was a story just the other day over the weekend about this longitudinal study that they want to do on that thing, so he's going to show himself that he's concerned about it, but actually, I think you're gonna see his effort. He performs surprisingly well among African Americans, and I think that there's going to be a strong push there. And Donovan, according to polls before the primary, does not do very well with blacks in Milwaukee. So I expect Black Talk Radio has already attacked Donovan on a couple of these points. So I think that'll be an issue during the next 6 weeks.
That might be more like the Dem Party or somebody else attacking rather than Barrett going negative, but who knows?
Right. Well, he did go negative today, saying Donovan's basically a Republican.
And I haven't. The Dem Party of Milwaukee.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. There'll probably be a little bit of distance on that.
Let's turn to the other race, which I think might be even hotter, which is for Milwaukee County Executive, State Senator Chris Larson versus the incumbent Chris Abele. Larson actually won the primary, and he did it basically with a Facebook campaign. I mean, it was shocking how little money he spent. What do you expect both of you going forward in that race? Mary, let me start with you.
I think one thing that benefited Larson was third-party groups, the Wisconsin Working Families Party. There were people attacking Abele, comparing him to Scott Walker, saying if you look closer, you'll see Scott Walker. He's, you know, obviously angered teachers unions, transit drivers, and I think that we will see outside groups getting involved in that race, and I think Larson benefited from that.
Is Abley a man without a country, Dan?
You mean in terms of a base?
Politically.
You know, he doesn't. He is trying to become a different type of Democrat by being a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. So he does. He does have that issue. They had their first debate this week,
right.
and I was actually surprised at how well Larson did. I thought Larson came across as someone who could appeared like he could be the county exec. I thought Chris Abley did not do as well. He came across as, somewhat condescending on some of the answers. At least that was the impression I got from what he had to say. What can we expect? I think Abley has spent a lot of money, maybe up to as much as $2 million so far in the race, but it's all been incredible.
Stop for a minute. This is a county executive race.
He's going to spend more than $5 million on this race, the people have told me, and maybe as much as $7, $8 million. But the difference is it's been all positive, very positive stuff.
Right. We've seen the ads.
Yeah, we've all gotten the direct mail pieces, many of them, but none of them have been negative, and there's no outside group. There is a new outside group that's been formed with Attorney Dan Adams. It'll be interesting to see if they use some of the information because, you know, Larson has a record. He was the majority leader in the Senate, didn't go particularly well. He was a member of the county board, took a number of votes there. Plus, he has his own disorderly conduct issue for theft incident when he was in college that I expect someone to bring up at some point.
I tell you what, I hope I never have to run for office and everyone finds out about the time I jumped in Shoal or Fountain at Indiana University in the middle of the night.
What year was that?
Right, there you go. So let's go to questions from our listeners. First is from Doug, who wonders, he says, talk radio has made a conscious effort to breed anger. And we certainly see a lot of anger this year, especially in the presidential campaign. Doug goes on to say that because angry people are motivated people, and motivated people donate money, are motivated to vote. So how much of a role do you think talk radio has in fostering anger, especially in relation to Donald Trump's situation?
I think talk radio is mainly interested in numbers and getting people to listen. So if anger works, then that's okay. And I think as long as Obama is president, that they're going to try to foster the issues of anger and resentment. If George W. Bush is in office, then they move in a different direction. So I do think that Donald Trump is very much a product of talk radio in terms of this blustery sort of Rush Limbaugh persona.
Although talk radio people are not supporting him.
No, but I think he is, for the last 15, 20 years, talk radio has had this sort of bellicose tone to the thing. Right. And I think the tone that Donald Trump uses is very consistent with talk radio.
Actually, I blame Survivor. Without Survivor 15, 20 years ago, this never would have happened.
Maybe so.
All right. Well, let's go to another question. And Mary, we touched on this, but I wonder if you could tackle it again. This is from Trevor. Will Ron Johnson's stance on the Scalia Supreme Court vacancy cost him his Senate seat?
I don't know that would be the only thing that costs him his Senate seat if he does lose, but I don't think it helps necessarily among the independent voters if he is seen as taking this hardline stance that is unpopular, where, especially if they do come up with a nominee who's pretty likable or moderate or even, conservative on some
issues. The bigger issue for him is he's had 5 years in office and still a third of the Republicans in the state say they don't know enough about him to form an opinion about him.
Right.
That's a bigger issue for him. He hasn't done the work in the last 5 years to make himself known across the state.
And that was something, whatever you think of Feingold, and a lot of people find him difficult in many ways, but whatever you think of him, he always got to every county every year, and so he was good at getting his name out there and being a part of the Wisconsin process.
But he did lose the independents in 2010. The independents moved to Johnson, but Johnson's vote total was very similar to Scott Walker's.
Yeah, so it could have been
that election. Right. It could have been that wave, but
it was a wave and not a presidential year. So
the electorate's different as well. One more question. This is from someone who signs herself Granny.
So, Granny, this is for you. Why is everyone picking on Donald Trump? He would do better than what we have now. Plus, he won't take, I guess it's whatever, we won't say this, from Congress. He won't take it from Congress. So, Dan, why?
Not everybody's picking on him. I think the Democrats would be pretty thrilled if he ends up winning the nomination. It's mainly the Republicans and the Republican establishment that's opposed to him, and that's because...
Conservatives.
You have no idea what he's going to say next. I don't think he knows what he's going to say next. So I think he's not a product of the system, and so there's a lack of control over what might happen if he's the nominee.
All right, we'll leave it there. That's it for now. Thanks for watching. For Mary Spacuzza, Dan Bice, Patrick Marley, and Craig Gilbert, I'm Dave Haynes with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.